Hello, everyone, and welcome to New Media Show number 117. And I want to welcome you to today's show. Got a great guest. But first and foremost, I want to introduce my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing great, Todd. This is a crazy day for me. I have candles and birthday things on my desk here, so it's another year here.
Happy birthday and welcome to the Devil Nickel. Of course, I'm not quite there yet. So luckily, yes, you are looking a little scruffy, as I said at the beginning of the show. But
I think it'll have a direct, feeling that will come across in my podcasting too. This beard, so it'll give me a whole new attitude.
Oh, okay, my wife banned beards and mustaches and all that stuff, but. Anyway, actually, good morning, Dan Franks with the Podcast Movement. How are you?
Good. Happy birthday, Rob.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. It's great to have you join us. It'd be great to get an update on what's happening with Podcast Movement. It seems like you guys are out there third announcing a bunch of great.
You guys, actually.
So, what's that?
It's the third year in a row I've been on with you guys, so I feel like it's an old hat at this point.
Well, I'm sure we'll have you on as we get a little closer, too.
Yeah. So.
Yeah,
but thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on. And this is, I got to admit, I haven't used Blab in a while, and it's a completely different interface than the last time I was on here, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. One thing, Dan, for sure, your ears should burn sometime on Saturday mornings, because we talk about you guys quite a little bit. So, when you guys are making announcements and stuff. So it's in a good way.
Yeah, well, thank you. I listened a few weeks ago, Todd, when you talked about the CES that you covered and talked about everything that went into covering an event, and heard that talk. So that was it's interesting to hear that other perspective, and it's really valuable kind of when I spend all my time on one side of the table and then hearing the other side of the table discuss it. So that was really good.
Yeah, CES sucks like 2 months of my life every year. It's a big event, you know, and not full time, of course, but it's huge, and we're still pumping out videos. My writing team's a little behind, so I had to incentivize them a little bit here the other day, saying, okay, I'm going to raise the posting rates. I gave them a new dollar amount I was paying per post, and that got them going. Sometimes cash is a motivator, but when you put out 250 or do 300 interviews, the post-show work is just... it's massive. It really is. And when you have five people that are essentially going to do all those posts, that's 60 each. That's a lot of writing, a lot of research. And it's a huge reward, 25, 30 million views on those videos every year. So that is what I do it for.
Yeah. And I also got to say I don't know what you would call it, not a webinar, but the video I did with Angelo a few weeks ago, talking about the blueberry stats and the raw voice kind of measurements and all that. That was, it was eye opening. I think I told you that same thing on Facebook, but kind of seeing everything that goes into it. And, you know, for me, it's like the only thing I think of is how to keep people from intentionally gaming the system. But there's so much unintentional going on with downloads restarting and all of those things that can really just screw up the stats. It was eye opening, to say the least.
Yeah. That was interesting. You know, we did an hour. We could have probably went another hour and went deeper, but that video has gotten a lot of attention. I put it up on LinkedIn, and that video alone has probably resulted in half the phone calls that have come in over the past week and a half. So, sometimes it's just we need to educate people a little more, and that's all it's all about. But for those of you that don't know what Dan's talking about, if you go over to powerpresspodcast.com, Angelo and I did a 60-minute deep dive on podcast statistics, talking about really the who, how, and why, and challenges, and, you know, stupid stuff that we see happening. And, you know, I think it's very comprehensive, and we didn't get too geeky, did we, Dan?
No, but geeky enough. You guys kind of stopped yourselves a little bit. You had to stop Angelo a few times when he was getting into the weeds. But like I said, I think some of that intricacy really helps open people's eyes to see what's actually involved. I think if you're too high level, then people still kind of take it lightly. But once they see everything that goes into it and the years of development, it makes it kind of obvious why some of the newer players in the game just aren't able to get as accurate of numbers as you guys do.
Yeah.
No, those that complain about stats simply just don't have them, or they're using a combination of a whole bunch of other people's and don't have a realistic idea of what really is happening. And we see that a lot. But, you know, I think the radio guys are, you know, that we've been talking to recently in, you know, looking to come in the podcasting space. It's really important to them. And Rob's got a topic to talk about a little bit later in the show today about that. But let's talk of, instead of talking about that, let's talk about podcast movement and what do you guys got cooking? I know you made a hint that you're going to make a big announcement, a big sign. Can you say who you have coming on as a new keynote, or is
top secret still? So what I'll say is it's somebody that we've been trying for last year and this year, and it's somebody that's been making some waves in the space. And I think every time we post kind of polls or tweet out and ask people who they want to see speak, this person's name comes up every time. So that's about all I'll say right now. We've only got a couple of days left before we announce it on Monday. But I think the event's really progressing well. We've in terms of number of registrants, we're way ahead of where we were 5 months out last year. So that's really promising in terms of the number of people that are going to participate this year. We've only announced a handful of speakers, but as we traditionally have in the past, we'll be every Monday releasing a few new speakers and kind of keeping the excitement going, because it's 5 months. It will go by really fast, but it's also a long time to keep interest and buzz going. So we try our best to do that. You know, super excited to be in Chicago. I think it's a really good town for podcasting, and it's, you know, has good history in audio production. So it's a central location. So all of those things, excited to kind of spread our wings and get out of Texas and see what the rest of the world has for us. So just a lot going on, and a lot of, evolution going on this year.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, as you look at the bigger picture, why did you guys pick Chicago of all places? I mean, is there some angle to that that you guys saw, or was just an opportunity at a hotel, or was it just to kind of get it in a big city up in the north?
Yeah, so not an opportunity at a hotel. I mean, we have a very great location, but Chicago's not the cheapest town to run anything in. You're dealing with unions at every location, so certainly didn't just, you know, find a good deal and decide to go with it. Really, the reason why we kept it in the Dallas area for 2 years was just how accessible it was. Mm-hmm. Regardless of where you're coming from in the U.S., it was centrally located, two international airports. So it made sense. So when we decided that it was time to take it on the road, we didn't want to, you know, if we planned to take it to the coast, we didn't want to do it right away. We wanted to, as we continue to grow, keep it somewhere that's centrally located and easily accessible. So that kind of narrows down and crosses a lot of different options off the list. Mm-hmm. And then Chicago just made sense, like I said, between WBEZ and Third Coast. And there's, you know, a good comedy, comedy podcast scene going on up there. So there's just a lot specifically related to podcasts going on in Chicago proper and in the Chicagoland area. So, and the other thing is, and I didn't know this until we got pretty deep into the Chicago, research process, was it has the greatest, concentration of people that are within driving distance of Chicago. So if you kind of draw a 5-hour driving circle around Chicago, there's more people that can drive into there than almost anywhere else. So in terms of accessibility for people that aren't flying in but driving in, Chicago made a lot of sense too. So, there's a lot of different pieces on different aspects of the event where Chicago just made sense for our first place when we left town here.
So do you think look into the future, it looks like that your strategy is kind of to remain central in the country, so it's easier from both coasts to come to the event. Do you ever see it moving where you maybe have two events, like one on each coast or something, or what's your thought?
You know, I think if we do decide to go to one of the coasts, it, at least for the foreseeable future, will be just one event a year. Okay. I think, you know, we've seen Blog World do the different coasts, and I think it worked okay, but they obviously kind of killed that idea. So I think for right now, one event, especially since all of us organizing it, it's a passion project. We're not doing it to you know, at this point, we're not making any money and we're not, you know, profiting off of it enough to dedicate full time. So one big event a year is more than enough that we can handle at this point.
And when, what happens too, is when you get, you know, we've seen this before, and I think it's smart to keep it central as much as possible, is because of the, and then you get the East Coast guys. If it's on, if it's in California, they're complaining. And then if you have it in New York, then the West Coast guys are complaining. I don't know. It is kind of interesting. I, you know, I fly 10 hours to get anywhere in, anytime anyway, but, I think it's smart keeping it central. It'll keep that, you know, the, hate to say it, the whiners from whining about the, you know, the
location. No, there's always, no matter where it is, there's always issues. We had some people complaining the past few years because of Texas politics, and they didn't want to even come set in the foot of Texas. And
really,
you know,
wow.
We have, okay. Yeah, they're, and then,
oh,
you know,
my God.
Whatever it is, that's what we figured out doing events. You know, it's hard to please everybody. It's impossible to please everybody. So, We do our best to try to cater to the largest audience, and if sometimes there's just some people that aren't going to be happy whatever you do.
Yeah, did you guys ever look at like doing an event in, you know, in another city in Texas? I mean, like Austin or someplace like that.
Yeah, and the problem with Austin is it's not as easily accessible. The airport there gets super crowded. Obviously, they handle South by Southwest and a bunch of music festivals, so they can handle the amount of people. Mm-hmm. You know, we're kind of in that awkward middle spot right now to where we're too big for most hotels. Mm-hmm. There's hotels that can handle us, but too big for most of the ones that were options the first couple of years. But we're not big enough to take over a convention center.
Yeah.
So a lot of towns like Austin, if we were bigger, we'd work well in Austin. If we were smaller, we'd work well in Austin in terms of meeting space. Mm-hmm. But where we're at right now, we're just not good for either. So definitely, you know, being so close to me, toured a couple places down there. Doesn't make sense this year. Probably doesn't make sense next year. But in the future, depending on how we evolve, it could.
And how podcasting grows too, I would imagine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
One of the challenges last year was, and I know we noticed this, that the sessions that were following lunch were really sparsely attended, and it was largely because I think people were, and the people tell me they were having challenges getting fed and getting back. So what do you think then from your location you're at this year? Is it going to be possible to turn 1,000 of us around in an hour, hour and a half, and get us fed and get us back?
Yeah, so there's a couple things we're doing specifically related to that. Anyone who remembers the first year remembers we were at a mall. The hotel that we were at was attached to a mall, which we thought was tailor-made for people during a lunch break to walk out. There's a food court, there's a couple sit-down places, so a lot of options. But a lot of people, for whatever reason, just didn't like or didn't kind of make themselves aware that that was an option. So we had people complaining they were on an island and they were, you know, couldn't get anywhere to eat. So one thing we tried to do last year, and ultimately it failed, was we wanted kind of what they call in the hotel space cash and carry, where you can walk up to a little table or a little, you know, kiosk, and they have a bunch of pre-made sandwiches and chips and, you know, whatever, little meals to just grab and go. And we had that all organized with the hotel this year. And what they did was our event somewhat unofficially started with some workshops the Friday, but the actual event wasn't until Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, 200 of the 1,100 people were there Friday, but they didn't comprehend that. So they set up a full spread and a full everything Friday last year. And of course, no one went because there was hardly anyone there. And a couple of those workshops bought pizza for the workshop, so even the people there didn't get lunch. So they just completely canceled the whole thing for Saturday and Sunday, which is when everyone was there and looking for food. So miscommunication, again, our second event we did. So we learned our lesson on that. This year, we're doing a couple of things different. First of all, where we are in Chicago is it's in the middle of everything. So there's within 5 minutes walking distance, there's probably 20 different places to eat. Which is probably half the amount of walking time that would have taken last year in Fort Worth. And then we're giving an hour and a half lunch break instead of an hour. And we're kind of spreading out. So our breaks between sessions are going to be a little longer, breaks throughout. So that's one of the things we did last year, was it was a little too compressed, specifically lunch. So we're just kind of adding a little cushion, a little hangout time, and a little more breathing room into everything. So I think all of those things will kind of go into making it a little better experience.
But I think that'll help a lot in getting people turned around. You know, people are going to linger in network anyway. That's just going to happen. That happens at every show. So, you know, that's probably 90% of where the work gets really done and people connecting and making connections and so forth. But so can you tell us just a little bit then, are you still going to have pre-events this year? Is there going to be stuff going on with the, you know, the day before the show, or are people going to be having events in the facility?
Yeah, so something that we tested last year and it turned out really well, and we're excited to kind of expand this year, is we called it PMX, so kind of a play off the TEDx. So anyone knows the TED Talks, you know, the TED conference is a couple really big events, and it's got a format of short talks and very targeted talks, and then they do TEDx events, which are smaller events around the country. So we kind of played off that, and we're doing PMX again the day before, which is basically at the venue. It's a free event for people attending. It's a free event for anyone who's not coming to Podcast Movement. And two of the stages are being used for these PMX talks. So instead of full 45-minute presentations that the speakers are giving, like they'll be giving at the regular conference, it's speakers giving 18-minute specific talks, no slideshow, just talks. There can be kind of like the TEDx, they'll do props or whatever you need. So it's very fast-paced, very energized talks. And most people last year, they just came and went throughout the day. So if they were there a day early, you could go between the different stages. You could see the lineup and see who was talking when. And it gives people that aren't necessarily going to be talking at the conference a chance to share, you know, share some of their message, because we get like 300 submissions a year for about 20 spots, quite honestly. So there's a lot of good sessions that get cut. But what we do is we're able to offer them to talk at PMX. Again, those are things going on podcast related that people, if they're there early, can hang out at. So that's kind of our big thing that we're expanding this year, on Wednesday, which is the day before the event. And then we also will have a couple workshops, and those will kind of be additional paid events, you know, probably $30 or $40 for the full day workshops. And those are put on by people that we're partnering with. So you know, one will be specifically for people who haven't started yet. And last year, Elsie and Jessica did kind of a women's podcasting workshop. So it'll be targeted workshops like that again, with groups that we're partnering with. And, you know, it's not putting anything more on our plate, but it is kind of adding some value options for the attendees that are already coming in from out of town to do something that day. So those are the things going on the day before. And then we're going to do the same thing we did last year, where we have kind of a welcome party, and then we have the Academy of Podcasters Awards, and we're having the Hall of Fame induction ceremony again this year. So so the day before will look similar, but hopefully just be a little more you know, organized and full during the daytime on that Wednesday.
So, Dan, I was going to ask you, you know, I think the concern I had, and I voiced it to you guys, it was, number one, was the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday show, with nothing going into the weekend, how is that affecting attendance? Because, you know, the majority of podcasters are working, so that means they have to take that, essentially that full week off. How's that affecting things? Can you say?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the two big things with the date this year are the days of the week being a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, as opposed to a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which we've been the past 2 years. And then obviously we're in the week following the 4th of July. So two big things that could potentially be barriers, or at the very least change the dynamic for the people that are coming. Like I said, kind of at the top when we started, our registrations are almost double to where they were this time, or 5 months out last year, mm-hmm. to where we are 5 months out this year. So in terms of numbers, in terms of returning registrants, a lot of those are the same. So I think obviously it's causing people to have to do some different things, specifically, like you mentioned, the people that are working, having to take off work. And then of course with the holiday, that can throw kind of a wrench in some people's plans. But we've heard actually equal feedback of people who, being on that holiday week, it works better for them, or people that are now able to bring their family so they can, you know, turn it into a week-long vacation in Chicago or hang out for the weekend after the event. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's kind of, it's been 50% positive, 50%, not necessarily negative, but it's, you know, much like anything, there's going to be people that like certain structures more and people that don't like it more. I think overall our goal was to give people almost a year's notice of the dates, almost a year's notice of the days of the week. So doing our best to at least let people plan ahead and plan accordingly as best they can. So yeah, to answer your question, the only metric I have to go by is that our registrations are higher right now than they were last
year. That's good. So. That's good news. Yeah, I know that, you know, from a total inclusion perspective, you know, the radio folks have been talking a lot about, you know, your event as well as a key thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a bunch of new people coming to the event from the broadcast radio side. Now, that's not talking about the public media side, but the more commercial radio side, I can see a lot more people coming because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, your event at all sorts of other conferences here over the last 6 months that I've been to as a place to go to learn about how to do podcasting. So I think it's going to be interesting to see that. Why don't you talk a little bit about kind of your panel sessions and your breakout sessions and kind of how that's going and kind of the new direction that you're actually going with that to focus more on the business side of podcasting? Is that something really new? I'm not sure it's entirely new, but maybe more of an emphasis.
Yeah. So overall the event where, you know, the first 2 years kind of trying to fly by the seat of our pants a little bit, learning as we go, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. So now we're starting to see what's the most important to continue the success of growing the event. And we really this year are focusing on putting more structure to the session. So internally, we've had tracking to where we know we have somewhat equal amounts of technical sessions and beginner sessions and creative sessions and maybe some industry focused sessions. But we weren't clearly communicating that to the attendees. And if you're here for this specific track, so to speak, like these are what you need to go to. So this year, that's the first thing we're doing is just taking a better approach to being able to communicate mm-hmm. that structure to the people that are there. So that's one thing. Anyone who hasn't been to our event, they'll know we kind of categorize our sessions into three different types. We have the keynote talks, which this year we'll just open the event and close the event. So not open and close each day. Those are the general session events to where everybody is in the theater in one room. There's only one thing going on. And then after those keynote talks, we break out into different breakout sessions. And those include panel discussions where there's, you know, a moderator and four different people on stage talking and asking questions and having more of a conversation. And then we have just our standard breakout sessions, which are pointed topics, pointed presentations, usually with a slide deck and some Q&A at the end. And those are, you know, more targeted towards some specific lesson or topic being taught. And yeah, Rob, like you said, this year where I see, and this a little bit was one of the motivating factors to trying out the Thursday, Friday, was we see there's going to be a lot of growth in our event from, you know, lack of a better term, the industry side of things, whether it's, you know, public radio, commercial radio, just now these companies that are podcast companies, you know, everything from your Gimlets to your Panoplies and your mid-rolls and these companies that are, you know, full-staffed companies that have people behind the scenes. So it's not just people talking into the microphones, but there's a lot of business going on behind those people talking into the microphones. So we're starting to kind of build out that industry track and really have sessions that cater to some of those people. So not chopping anything off or not taking anything away from the conference, but just being able to add that new component. That's one of our big growth areas this year.
Dan, there was a question for you. First time attendees, what's the best way to get in touch with people online leading up to Podcast Movement?
Yeah, Craig, if you're looking to interact with the people that are going to be at the event, just search Podcast Movement in Facebook and there's a group and not a page. We have a page as well, but a group. And that's where a lot of the attendees or the people that are going to attend this year, that's where they're at interacting. I would say that's the best thing. As we get closer to the event, there's going to be a lot of people using the PM16 hashtag talking about it. But 5 months out, it's still a little early for, you know, a lot of buzz to be going on and people asking who's doing what on what days. So I would say there's a couple Facebook groups and specifically the one that we run that's kind of targeted towards those conversations. So that would be a good place to start.
And Ryan, your question was kind of answered earlier. Basically, Chicago Central, lots of options for entertainment, food. That's kind of the reason. And they wanted to move around a little bit just to kind of keep it as a quick and dirty answer there. You know, I think one thing that we're seeing, Dan, And we've talked about it in the last couple of weeks on this show, is about 90% of the calls I'm taking right now are from traditional radio companies. And we've had a flurry of new clients coming on board. People are hiring. We just brought a network on board from overseas. They've they just hired 10 people to do their podcasting effort. They are a conglomerate. They have 200 plus stations and like 350 to 400 shows that they're actually going to make into to podcasts. So the and I want to make sure that you know, we talk about that a lot here, because that's where you know, from a business standpoint, we're excited about that. But at the same time, those folks are definitely going to be looking for things that are going to be helping their businesses and helping them grow. How are we going to, as in some podcasters, like, oh my God, traditional radio is coming, it's going to ruin it for all of us. I don't necessarily believe that, because I think there's something for everyone in the content space. So when you're dividing the tracks, again, you're going to have the business track, then you're going to have more of an educational track. Do you see it going to a third track, or is it just that's too much for your event in 2 days?
Yeah, well, and we're dividing it up a little more than that, but I, you know, the big divide would be the content creators versus kind of the business people. So the content creator side will have more than just, you know, one general track. There'll be one, you know, stuff about the creation aspect, the technical aspect, the marketing, the monetization, all that. But then the industry side is kind of on the other side of that great divide. Mm-hmm. So I would say what you're asking about, Todd, that would fall a little more on that industry side of things. We'll have multiple, you know, so multiple different topics being discussed on that industry side. One of the people that I'm somewhat working with to curate what those sessions need to be, Stephen Goldstein. I know you guys, or I think you guys have had him on this show before.
Oh yeah.
But I know you've talked about him.
Yeah.
So, and Stephen's helping me. He's obviously from the traditional side of radio, but he's now made the move to the dark side, and he's helping me kind of curate ideas and topics and put me in connection with some people that he might, you know, want to see as somebody with that background. And as somebody that's still, you know, in touch with all those people on those sides that potentially could be coming to the event. So I don't think, Todd, that it'll be a huge part of the event, but, just talking anecdotally to some people, we probably had less than 10 of those types at the event last year. And I think that number will increase significantly this year. So we want to, you know, have something for them. But at the same time, you know, we talked about last year, New Media Expo kind of going to the radio people and trying to kind of get in with them. Whereas I think ours is kind of that opposite direction where they're coming to us. So I don't necessarily think we need to fully cater to them, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of them are going to come in and want to see a lot of the same type of sessions that the beginning podcasters maybe want to see. So I think, I mean, a lot of the sessions that you're doing already will probably cater to a lot of their needs. And if there's, you know, a business track, like what's being worked on here, then they'll be able to tap into that stuff too. But, you know, it could be a lot of fresh faces coming into your event, coming from the commercial radio. There's a lot of people that work in that business. And I think another trend that we're going to see happen too over time is this divide between the business programming, marketing folks, and the talent side. So you're going to have two sides of the industry. For many years, this podcasting space has been, the podcaster has done everything, right? So, but as this becomes more of a professional medium, you're going to see, just like what you're starting to cater to, is a divide happens. There's going to be a lot of people that are involved in podcasting that don't do podcasting. And that's becoming more and more the case every year here.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I don't necessarily like that fact. I would like to see everybody involved in podcasting doing podcasting, because I think it makes everybody better, but that's not the realities.
Yeah, Rob and I were kind of talking about it in the past, that I think if you look at all the major companies and who's in those top level management positions, the high majority of those companies have no podcasters that are podcasting. They are purely business people. I think Rob, me, Rob Walsh.
It's getting to be a smaller list all the time. Yeah.
Small list actually are doing the business of podcasting as well. And, you know, to me, it's an advantage because I get to talk to a lot of podcasters and find out what their pain points are. You know, it's, I don't know. It's you know, it's a traditional radio model is what it is. And you've got guys in suits and you have the, in the talent and you know, for a long time, talent in the suit were the same person, you know, on my show, I'm the talent and I'm the suit, you know, so
yeah,
you know, the buck stops here. And in many cases, in some of these groups, that is not the case anymore. You know, they're just there to be the voice.
Well, and we're,
you know, it had,
we're kind of a little bit living in the past on that. So, I mean, if you look at commercial radio is very much like that. There's suits and then there's talent, right? And I think that that's coming to podcasting. I think it's a natural evolution of the medium as it becomes a more serious kind of medium. So,
and I hope that the lessons we've learned over the past 10 years are applied to that new model too, because, you know, I'd hate to be a talent that was working for someone and they get a baby diaper commercial for their tech show or something like that, and then be forced to run, you know, an advertising or something. And you would hope that those, because I could see the suit saying, oh, we got to fill this inventory and monetize it. And the podcasters or the talent screaming, oh my God, you just put this in my show. I can't believe you did that, but they have no choice. They have to run it. But, and maybe that's an extreme example, but I could foresee that, that happening.
Dan, speaking of talent, what is the event's kind of orientation towards, actually, you know, like a Podfest type of format? I know that's been talked about in the past. Is there any kind of, live podcast that you guys are looking at having as part of the event, or any kind of, way for like maybe people in Chicago to maybe participate at that level, or is there any thought on that?
Yeah, so that's something we really, really tried hard to implement. You know, it made sense with us doing a podcast movement on Thursday, Friday, and kind of having that weekend that we know a lot of people are going to be holdovers. Mm-hmm. Also, like we said, in Chicago, a town that's pretty rich in podcasters and podcast listeners. It made sense to try to do something more for the consumer side than the, you know, podcast movements for the creator side of things. So we really did try to figure out a way to Saturday, Sunday, maybe Friday night, do something specific for, you know, live podcasting. So not teaching, but just, lack of a better term, entertainment, mm-hmm. concert, mm-hmm. festival type thing. And it was just really hard to do. So
yeah.
We wanted, if we did it, we wanted to do it right. We didn't have any interest in doing it in like a hotel ballroom and kind of carrying that over. We really wanted to do it in, you know, a theater type environment, or maybe a bar that might host live music. And in Chicago, it's a really tough sell to do that kind of thing. There's all the theaters that we looked at. Jared and I, we spent 2 days up in Chicago touring, I think, every theater in town and talking to them and trying to get a couple evenings worth of stage time. And, you know, we were there 7 months out or 8 months out. This was October or November this year, mm-hmm. Trying to figure out a way that we could grab just a few cool theaters in that central Chicago location. And they just all have shows that run, you know, Thursday through Sunday, and they can't give up those nights. And they say, hey, if you want Monday or Tuesday night, we can give you those. So it didn't work out. Now, I will say, we're doing a couple of things and partnering with a couple of people that will at least bring that element into it a little bit. What we're doing on Thursday night. So traditionally we've done an offsite party and we bust some people over and we've had really good feedback and really bad feedback. And most people are just kind of take it or leave it in the middle. A lot of feedback we got was that people wanted more just hangout time, less organized time, and more, you know, whatever you would call it, meet out time, or just, again, networking time, just kind of that open time. So Thursday night, that night in between the two full days of the conference, we're doing a couple different things. The first is for anyone who wants an organized event, wants something going on that they're kind of told this is something you can go do. We're partnering with Third Coast Festival that's based out of Chicago and really big in the audio and a lot of NPR and public radio type audio producers, mm-hmm. But really big into live events for those people. and they do something, and it's just an entertaining show. It's called Podcast Therapy, and it's a stage show. It's entertaining. People ask questions to the therapists that are on stage, and the therapists are podcasters, probably people that will be speaking at the event. Ask them fun questions, and then they get podcast clips to answer, you know, give them therapeutic answers. So it's just fun. It's completely different from what people are getting during the day, but it's still podcast oriented. And it's something that if they want some entertainment in the evening, they can go to that. We also have a really cool partnership that I can't announce yet because it's not final, but it'll also be going on that same stage during that same kind of evening session. And it'll be really, really something different and something that'll be entertaining for people that want to do it. But at the same time, we're kind of advertising, hey, if you want a free night to see Chicago or hang out at the hotel bar and talk until the early hours with other attendees, this Thursday night, this is kind of your free time. So really just kind of opening that up. And then the other thing going on in Chicago while we're there, which is just pure coincidence, is there's something called Taste of Chicago. And it's this big food festival that happens about three blocks, coincidentally enough, from where the conference is going to be this year. Free food festival. Throughout the week, they'll have about 1.5 million people come through those grounds. So really giant thing. And something they did at a small scale last year was they had like a live podcast stage. And specifically, food podcasts would podcast live there, and people would just come and go and kind of listen to it. But we saw that as a chance to potentially partner with them and help them with some of their programming and maybe broaden the horizons a little bit away from the food and be more, more open in the niche as far as the podcasters that are doing live podcasts there. So that's still something we're working on, but I think potentially we could be helping them program their evening and then their weekend entertainment at Taste of Chicago from their live podcast stage. So nothing as formal as we hoped, Rob, but we're still going to try our best to include that element.
Yeah. It sounds like it. It sounds like, you know, a great solution here. So it'll be interesting to see what your after hours events turn out to look like, you know, at the event. It's going to be fun.
You know, I say this every year to every organizer, to every event I go to.
Yeah. Keep the volume down.
Talk.
Keep the music low, right? Is that it, Todd? Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, the space you had last year was good because we could get out of the main area where it was loud and go into back areas and talk. That was perfect. So if the venue has that kind of capability, that's even better. The one thing I was going to ask you about, and it's just an observation I made, registration. You guys got slammed last year, and to the point of it was bordering on, oh my gosh, craziness. Any thoughts on if you're going to mail badges or do anything different this year?
Yeah, so what we're going to do is, first of all, we're going to make it clear to people that you don't have to pick up your badge on Friday night. You can come early on Saturday. There's multiple options to pick up your badge. So I think people kind of got that desperation mentality. We have the welcome party, go have a drink, go hang out, go see the vendors, go get a good seat for the awards. We didn't clearly communicate that you can get your badge at any time. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we're going to open up the registration desk at noon instead of at 5. So one thing that we had last year, that why it didn't dawn on us last year, I don't know, but it's the live and learn thing, was people would be coming up to the desk and they say, oh, can I register? And we're like, oh no, come back at 5. There's no reason why we couldn't just pass off the badge there. So this year we're going to make it very clear to everyone, you know, as you get to the hotel, during your free time, while you're walking around, come by from noon till 5. And there's nothing going on but the desk being open. So we think that'll help it. The setup this year will be a little bit better in terms of the registration desk not being so cramped and right next to the escalator. And the spacing this year will be a little better for us to be able to spread out. So I think I think in a number of different ways, hopefully we'll be better there this year. But
it's one of those things where you just have to learn it, right? You just like, okay, you think everything's going to go great, and you're like, why didn't we do that? That was,
Yeah. Well, and just like the little things, like the name badges were alphabetically ordered on their little slots they go in, but they were, I guess if you turned them the other way, then they were reverse alphabetically ordered. and a couple people got up there and rearranged things. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Z is next to the B, and before you know it, there was mass chaos. So we'll, again, live and learn, and we'll figure out a better way to do it next time.
So the exhibition part of it, is that going to be held in the same way that you've done it in the past? Right in the middle of where all the sessions are, or is it going to be in a separate location this year?
It'll be a little bit different, but it won't be off to the side still. So just the way the floor plan at this location is laid out, it's not in the middle. They're going to be a little more condensed, but they'll still be condensed in an open area. So the location we're at this year at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago, some of the rooms are just complete like air walls, which means they can be there, they cannot be there. It's like Legos, where you can kind of design what you want these rooms to be like. Mm-hmm. So a couple of those were able to just wipe out the walls altogether and turn that into this area. So it'll be like a hybrid. So they're together, and the feeling of the floor layout will be a little more traditional, but in terms of the accessibility, it'll be right in the middle of everything. So I think it's the best we can do for this space, but I think it'll turn out really well. And I think it'll be good. And, you know, we'll the exhibitors this year are going to be really good. I think we had about 30 last year. We'll probably have about 40 this year. Still having to turn some vendors away. I said it, I think, when I was on with you guys last year, or if not, I don't hide the fact that we've all been to conferences that are for audio people that have the guy giving back massages in the middle of it because he was willing to pay for a booth. And that's just something that we've, from the beginning, we've said that's not something we're going to allow, or the remote control helicopters that they sell in the middle of the mall. Sometimes those guys will buy a booth at the conferences. So we really try our best to keep it to the people exhibiting are specifically applicable to the attendees. So that's why I think, you know, we could expand to 50 exhibitors and make a little bit more money, but it would, I think, hurt the experience a little bit. So that's kind of what I have to say about the exhibit hall.
It's funny, Mike.
Rob, maybe.
Oh, go ahead, Todd. Sorry.
You know, I think what we've seen, be honest with you, I hate trade shows anymore where we're like kind of like off and never land. And you might, you're lucky if you get, really any foot traffic, and because it's so segregated, for a better word. So I know at some point, if you guys, a couple more years and you grow to the point where the vendor count increases the point where you can't do that anymore, I know it'll change. But I know for me, being a business person, and the way your guys' layout last year was just, dynamite. It was perfect. I know that every venue is going to be a little different. You're not going to be able to exactly replicate that. But the longer you can hang on to that type of a vibe, at least in my opinion, is good. It's a good number one. The people are kind of chit-chatting at the same time. They're hanging out. It's like a big family reunion. And even though the vendors are there to do business, it's still, we've been in this space long enough that for most of us going to these shows are like, hey, how you doing? How's your year been? What's new? It's those types of relationships that, and those types of conversations that happen are invaluable as a business person. We still want to do business on the floor, but you're more there to wave the flag and say thank you and how you doing and mm-hmm. how can we help or what can we do better. So I think you're
building relationships.
And you guys took that on board when people, when we were talking about it, because it really goes back to the old school, the very, very beginning, the New Media Expo stuff. And even though we weren't exactly in the same area, it was this great vibe, and I think you guys have done a real good job in replicating that, and I really commend you guys for that.
Cool, thank you. Yeah, that's something that after going to a lot of those trade shows and conferences, that's something that was really important to us, was trying to create that kind of full inclusion. And hey, this is not just the area that you're going to see the booths, but you're also hanging out. And, oh, by the way, the booth is here. Now I'm going to talk to the people working the booth. So really try to kind of blur those lines a little bit.
Yeah.
So Dan, are you seeing any kind of new companies coming in that are part of the audio space that are going to be exhibiting this year? Any kind of new trends that you're seeing of other types of companies? I see that Shure is going to be there from a hardware perspective. Is there any others that you think are coming that will be, and like an Audio Technica or people like that?
Yeah, so Shure, Sennheiser, and Miketek were the three hardware companies there last year. Shure and Sennheiser will both be back. I forget, one of them brought a product to sell there and sold out like Friday. He just completely underestimated the purchasing power of the people that are there. Sure, we'd love to have a lot more hardware things there because that's the hardware representatives there, because that's what a lot of us that do podcasting, that's kind of what we geek out on.
Yeah.
It's just a really hard sell to those people. You know, they don't quite understand that podcasters are very similar to other, other people that are kind of gear nerds and will spend money on these things. It's just been a surprisingly hard sell. To me, as somebody that's spent a lot of money with all these companies, it makes sense. Like, why wouldn't Audio Technica want to be there? Because half the podcasters on iTunes are using the Audio Technica ATR2100.
So yeah, exactly.
Why would they not want to be there? That being said, in terms of growth, it's going to be cool. I think we're slowly expanding. It's a slower expansion than I thought. But for instance, Hindenburg, which has a pretty well-known and good audio production software, they're going to be there this year. And there's a couple other software providers that'll be there this year. And then we've got our typical churn. We had some of those startup audio recording type exhibitors the last year and the year before, and some of those are gone, and some new blood and new people trying out some different things are coming in. For instance, last year we had PodClear, which is acquired by Blab, which we're on right now.
Yeah.
And we have some other things coming in that are similar to PodClear and different audio online recording platforms. So we're definitely seeing growth. It's not in any one concentrated area. Fielding a ton of emails and calls related to exhibiting. But like I said, there's probably equal amounts that we tell aren't good. You know, we tell them they're not good fits as ones that we, you know, start to move forward with.
Yeah, it's good to see that. I think the more of these companies we can get involved in really taking a position at these events at whatever level, either sponsoring it or being an exhibitor, I think is really, really key to growing the overall space, definitely. So are you guys seeing a lot of interest from the public radio side? It looks like, you know, you have a lot of keynote speakers from the public radio side, which is a good sign that they're maybe all coming back and wanting to get involved in an event in a bigger way this year.
Yeah. And we'll have a good mix again for sure as some more of the names start coming out. But yeah, that's something that we, you know, took in the chin a couple of times or the first year for sure about being, you know, business focused, marketing focused. Mm-hmm. And we talked about last year, I think that was just kind of that was just how we had to do it because those are the people we knew and the people that would come in for the limited budget we had and all those things. So we've made a big effort to kind of evolve and spread our fingers out through the whole very fragmented podcast community. And so I think now, as when people look at the overall lineup for this year, it will look a little more heavily leaned towards the public radio space. But I think that's more just people comparing it to prior years where it's been a lot of the marketing focus and things like that. So I think it'll just become more evenly balanced this year. And that's what we're seeing. And you know, a lot of people that are now being successful independent podcasters got their roots in the public radio space. So I think those people will kind of always have that scarlet letter on them about being public radio people, even when they're, you know, 5 or 6 years removed and doing their own thing. So, but I think that's kind of the podcast industry as a whole, is showing that scarlet letter a little bit.
And what's interesting is the shows, those guys that came from public radio, their shows sound like public radio. So I made a public declaration a couple of days ago. Do not sound like public radio.
Yeah. And a lot of the folks at National Public Radio, the mothership are feel a little threatened by this too, because they feel like that they own that sound, right? So it's now spreading, right? Yeah. I mean, it is a very, very distinct sound brand that those guys have, and they
public radio.
I mean, it's a very distinct sound. And you talk to people from National Public Radio, they'll tell you that's purposely done. They want to have a unique sound of what they do because it's a differentiator, and now it's spreading, right?
Throw up my mouth.
I know. Well, it's audio quality, Todd. That's all it is. It's a cadence. It's a way that you speak is also what it is.
It's the cadence.
Yeah.
It's the cadence that
it's Todd, very East Coast.
I mean, you know, it's, and I hate to say it. Sometimes it sounds very condescending to the listeners.
Well, so it's supposed to sound intellectual, Todd. That's the idea.
Okay.
It's not a condescending thing, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the content sounds kind of condescending in a way. And yeah, I don't know. I had a little rant the other day about Apple TV, and I was what it boiled down to was, is I was, you know, I just kind of, I upgraded my latest generation Apple TV, got the podcast app. I went to the top channels in tech and I'm listening, you know, here's, I'm seeing all these ones I'm expecting to see. I'm like, who's this? And I click on it and it plays and I'm listening and I'm like, this is not a tech show. This is like a soft, cool tech talk. It wasn't tech. It was just a talk show that someone had placed in the tech category that had this NPR sound. And I was like, okay, there's a one-off. And then I was going through, but I found like 10 that were not tech. So Apple's got a real issue in people not putting their shows in the right category. It's totally bizarre. But, you know, when you have 307 or 308,000 listings in there, I guess it's very hard to keep them organized. But it was just a rant I had a couple of days ago about the whole Apple TV organization.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, you're sitting in a very unique position in the podcast community because you're working on pulling this event together, and that puts you in a position where you see a lot of stuff. I mean, you talk to a lot of different people. You know, I've tried to do a lot of that kind of stuff myself over the years and, you know, really, really have my fingers in a lot of different parts of the podcast community, you know, from the comedians to the educational podcasters to the religious podcasters and the big media podcasters as well. So you can probably give us a little bit of a perspective on where you think the podcast space is today and what you kind of think we'll see as big trends here moving into 2016 and beyond here. What's the big thing that you see is kind of evolving out there right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's just the word that I keep using is fragmented, and I don't think that's anything new. And I'm not sure that what's happening is making things less fragmented.
Yeah.
You know, one of the largest group of podcasters that we've struggled getting as both speakers and attendees at the event are the comedy podcasters.
Yeah.
You know, comedy podcasts make up a good chunk of podcasting, and I think in the early days that was one of the things that kind of drove the medium.
Yep.
Was the comedy podcast, and we've just struggled to get those people in attendance. We struggled to get those people to speak. So I mean, I think to me that's kind of the, I don't know what you call it, but the measuring stick. Like, until those people start integrating with the other types, it's still just as fragmented. And you know, obviously we see a little bit of the big getting bigger, the rich getting richer. In terms of, you know, your Gimlets and things like that, where they're continuing, you know, they add a new show and that show immediately goes to the top. And what it does is it bumps somebody that's not Gimlet out. And then, you know, some of the, I think that's right now, that's kind of the trend, I think, is that the big business is winning. But that being said, as we're getting more listeners, I think that's not necessarily how it's going to stay. Or the more podcasts that come into the space, people are going to stop looking at the top 100 iTunes because that really doesn't mean anything. And I think the more listeners, the more podcasts, the less and less that means. Like when Todd was talking about the top iTunes shows, I think most people, or about half the podcasters, already probably don't care about it. And I think fewer and fewer will. There's going to start being a different measuring stick to what success is in terms of listeners and traction and all of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people misunderstand what that ranking chart represents. And I think a lot of press, a lot of journalists are driven by that ranking chart. A lot of the shows, the biggest shows, are not even in that ranking chart.
It's crazy. I see it every day. I look at a show and they're got massive numbers and they're not anywhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that? I've never understood that. What is iTunes doing?
Well, the iTunes, process that they've come up with to do that ranking chart is based more on recent popularity or recent growth, right? So it's a compilation of your ratings, your commenting, your comment ratings, those kind of things, as well as how fast you're growing subscribers and how fast you're growing your downloads in a relatively short period of time. It does factor a little bit into your history, but it's really weighted heavily towards the last 48 hours or the last. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows the algorithm, but that's what I've heard from a variety of sources, that it's really skewed towards what's current and what's recent. And so shows that have built an audience over, like the Adam Carolla show has built a huge audience. His if you look in the ranking chart for the episode rankings, I think that's probably more accurate, because that one is ranking how popular an episode is. But the actual top podcast list is more recent around, subscriptions and things like that. So
yeah, it's bizarre, and a lot of times media buyers are like, well, I want this show. And you go over there and you pull their data and you're like, they don't meet your requirements. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, they might be a top 25 show, but they don't have the numbers to, even meet your minimum buy standards. So it's totally, just because you're in the top 25 doesn't mean you have the biggest audience. So, yeah. And then sometimes you do. Sometimes some of those shows have massive audiences, but it's weird.
Well, and that's also a need.
No reason.
Yeah. I mean, that's also a need that the industry has too, that we haven't been able to figure out, is how do we rank shows by size? Because there isn't one either third party resource that's actually tracking that today. So I don't know how that could be done in the future.
Hey, this is Rob and I talked about this yesterday on the phone, but Rob, you want to bring up this survey that says that the podcasting should be streaming and we shouldn't be calling it podcasting. We should be calling it on-demand media. Do you want to talk about that at all? Or
yeah, I mean, I can talk a little bit. Here this past week, a new survey research document came out from Bridge Ratings, which is Dave Van Dyke, who's been a longtime kind of radio researcher and radio consultant for many years. I've known him probably since the mid-90s myself, and he's been doing research in the broadcast area for many years. And then he started to move into doing research around podcasting. And Dave and I talked a lot over the last 10 years or so about podcasting. And so he came out with a new study. He posted, I believe it was on the 27th or something like that, that shows that the research that he's doing out there is showing that if podcasting wants to grow like five times bigger than it is today, that he's advising, based on the research that he's seen, is that we evolve the medium away from the term podcast and move it towards on-demand audio. And then the other part of it is to evolve the medium to more streaming than downloading. And that does play into a little bit of a narrative that is coming out of the radio side right now. That the radio and online streaming folks would like to see this medium move more towards streaming and change the name, because they see it as a kind of like a, there's too much of a level of confusion between radio and podcasting as far as understanding the audience, understanding really what a podcast is. And so they're seeing this on-demand audio as kind of like a middle ground between radio and digital. And based on what this guy's research is showing, is that that's the case, and that there would be more listeners that would come into consuming this medium if we referred to it as something like an on-demand audio versus podcasting, just because there's not a strong understanding of what that is out there. So that's kind of in a nutshell what this was, and I talked to Dave on my Spreaker Live show. The episode actually hasn't gone live yet. It's going to go live next Wednesday. So I did a complete deep dive. I did like 45 minutes with him. And we talked about all sides of his research and what the implications of it is for podcasting. And I challenged him on the assumptions that he's making from that research, based on the perspectives of the podcast community and how the podcast community will look at that research. Todd, do you want to add your two cents to this too?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, here's the first thing. It was a paid, he got paid by someone.
Yeah, it was a paid study
to do this mm-hmm. survey. Yep. So anyone that paid, our survey has objectives. So I would always preface that with any type of results that comes out of a survey that's paid. Now, if I do a survey, I'm going to have objectives too. So let's not be shy about that.
But well, no, he was clear the objective of there was some assumptions going into this study that were exactly what his conclusions came out with, that the name needs to change and that it needs to move towards streaming. That was the assumption going into the study. So he was basically doing a study to validate that assumption. So anyway, go ahead.
But really what it is there's, you know, and again, if you're not really educated on the space, a lot of people like to say that podcasts are streamed. Well, in a sense, yes, but they're served from a fixed media file, byte served.
A lot of them are streamed. You know, it's just not the streaming server.
Some of them are streamed. Some companies do stream. They use 90s technology like Shoutcast to stream the media, which is, you know, that's Spotify and Pandora and all those folks use streaming services. And you can do on-demand Shoutcast stream servers, but again, I think what some of the objective is they want to control the space, and they're thinking they can do that. What they don't realize, or they can change the space. And there's going to be companies that are going to use whatever delivery system they want. It's irrelevant. But what it really boils down to is that people still today want to take their media with you, and they mm-hmm. want to be able to put it on the device and consume it on demand when they want. So while I don't have such an issue with calling this podcast on demand, because that's what we've been saying it's been from the beginning, I think they're going to have a hard time getting around changing the name, and however the media is delivered is how the media is delivered. But I will say this, they want the ability to garner more information from listeners by using some of the tools that have been developed in the streaming space. Mm-hmm. And they don't like the simple fact that Apple has 80% of the basically consumption at this point in the podcasting space. And there's nothing really they can do about that. And Apple's not going to be the one giving up information about what's happening to that media as it's either being streamed or downloaded. And again, that's really kind of I hate the word stream used in the podcasting space. I like to call it active listening. Someone's went to the page and hit play and it's an active listen, but
from a listener perspective, they don't really care whether it's using a Shoutcast or Icecast server or it's HTTP. Progressive download
like Stitcher, play. And they dumb down the audio, Rob.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to happen that way. Yeah.
Well, the majority of them do. I mean, you guys don't, but you're one of the few companies that don't.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. So, like a Stitcher and a Spotify and stuff, they do downsample stuff to some degree. But I don't know. I think there's some good points to it. And really, I think it could be an evolution. I mean, I don't see these changes that are coming out of this, the results of this research being necessarily inaccurate for the future of the medium. But that future could be 5 or 10 years, right? I think it's going to be a slow progression. And Todd, you and I were talking about this last night, that, you know, as you look at the trend line for radio and the trend line for podcasting, they're both heading towards each other, right? Radio's declining slightly. Yep. And podcasting is growing slightly. And is it 5 years out that these two mediums meet and are of equal size? I think it's going to happen. It's just, we don't know how long it's going to take.
Dan, I don't know. It's for you, it's probably semantics. You don't care as long as the audience listens, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think on-demand audio is pretty literal. It's not as easy to market or throw in a headline. Hey, come listen to our on-demand audio show. It's a good way to describe what a podcast is, though. Hey, I do a podcast. What's that? It's on-demand audio. Oh, yeah. Cool. I don't see any issue with that being the way to describe it, but easily describe it because that's what people know. But like, you say I'm going to go watch Netflix. You don't say I'm going to go watch some on-demand television. Like, I think the literalness of it is a little silly to say that's what it's going to be called in the future.
Yeah.
It's been on demand for.
Go ahead, Todd. Sorry.
No, it's been on demand for years. You know, we had a DVR before there was a DVR. So, it's the thing. It's cool here is it's just the way the media
is. Didn't you know that the term podcast has always been personal on demand casting? You know?
Okay.
POD cast, personal on demand casting. Yeah.
I think that was Rob. I think you've clinged to that for many years, so I don't necessarily. I think that was something you ad libbed in there, but
holding on for dear life. I want that to be true. Yes,
but you know what it really shows. What this really shows is that the radio people are crapping their pants. This is what this shows. When they are trying now to skew the conversation, it can't be podcast, it has to be on-demand radio. So it shows you that the radio industry understands they're heading for a brick wall. And they are a cliff. They're heading for a cliff and a chasm that goes, because they're going to have to figure out a way to survive digitally. And again, radio is a multi-billion-dollar business. So, and I think maybe, what do we have, $100, $120 million advertising, maybe max in the space right now. So we're a long ways away. If someone was spending $1 billion in a podcasting space a year, there wouldn't be an advertiser. There wouldn't be a podcaster one without three ads in their podcast. So, we've done some projected growth rates recently, and I really was like telling my guys that we can't be, we have to be reasonable. We have to be able to achieve these types of goals. What is possible? And can we really do this? Anyway, we went back and forth and looking at where the growth is really headed, and based upon our growth last year, which we had incredible growth, and we're small, and yet we know the potential of where this thing's going to go. So I'm excited. I think the space isn't going to slow down at all. I think it's continue to grow. You look at your guys' event, Dan. You guys are getting lots more people talking to you from all types of business spaces than you were in the past. Is there anything that's surprising you that the calls you're taking for Podcast Movement?
Actually, it surprises me that how slow some of the word is spreading. We talk about, the word's spreading, and I'm getting a lot of some people that are aware of us that haven't been aware of us in the past, but I'll still send an email or, cold call a company or something every day that I'm like, of course, like if they're doing their due diligence and figuring out where they need to be, of course they'll have found us, and they just haven't. So I think, much like the fragmented podcast industry, our event is still not reaching some of those fragments. So I think the surprising thing is just, when I do talk to somebody that's in the podcast space, it's like, oh, this is the first time I've heard of you. Mm-hmm. And that's specifically related to a lot of these. It's probably because they're small, but they're these, app companies. They have either a web app or a mobile app, and it's some way to do your podcast on your phone. These have existed before, and they'll continue to, go through different iterations, and new companies will come in. But it just surprises me how little research they do in terms of, if you do research on where to market your new app or how to access podcasters. Like, I've done it before. I've gone to incognito mode, turned off private searches, and put myself in the shoes of these people and figured out how long would it take them to stumble across us, and then figure out how to move up in that ranking just on Google alone. And it's not that hard to find us. So what surprises me most are the people that are investing all these time, all these development hours, all these development dollars into building something for podcasters, but they're still oblivious to what's actually going on in the space. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty surprising to me. And I don't know if you guys have seen that with some of these new pop-ups.
Yeah, I see it all the time as I talk to new people and people that have actually been producing content for a long time. You know, do you know about Podcast Movement? And most of them don't know. I mean, it's amazing to me. And Todd, you probably see this all the time too, how disconnected a lot of people are to beyond their own world, you know, of what's happening in a medium that they're actually participating in. That they don't know about this stuff, and it's a word of mouth process, and I think that's what you're up against. Is,
well, but I'm taking Podcast Movement out of it, and I'm just saying anything that's important going on in the industry, these people I talk to, and I'll get on the phone, and oftentimes they're foreign companies. That's what the first problem is. Oftentimes they're catering to U.S. podcasters, but they're foreign, so I think there's some disconnect there. But even the companies here, and not just Podcast Movement, but just Happenings or other companies, other groups that have things going on, that if they're trying to cater to podcasters, they should know, and they just don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when we tell people the reach we have and who we can connect them with, they're like, really? And they give you this look like, you know, so I think I don't think companies are doing a lot of research and education. I think they're living in their bubble. And you know, if you look at the podcasting space as a whole, there's no reason, Dan, that you guys, you know, if this thing really rocks, you guys could fill an arena. You know, you even if you got half of the active podcasters there, you wouldn't know what to do with all these people. You know, it would be a massive event. But you'll never get half of active podcasters ever come to an event. If you can get 10%, you're still going to have, oh my God, one of the biggest trade shows in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, but, and one of the things we deal with, and I say fragmented, and it's fragmented in a number of different ways, also fragmented in ways of people that are happy doing it out of their basement or happy doing it out of the garage, don't really care. You know, they're happy with 100 listeners, which is fine. That's perfectly okay to be that person. But, you know, if 50% fall into that category, then those 50% we can just take off the table of people that would even, you know, our event would even appeal to. So I think that's one of the biggest things we struggle with is since we are now appealing to professionals as well as the hobbyists, we have the hobbyists that, you know, a portion of them are going to say your event's too expensive. And then we have professionals that say, wow, you're a quarter of what NAB runs us. So we can send our whole team instead of one person. So we get feedback from both sides, and that's really where we kind of not struggle, but that's one of our challenges, to try to find what's that middle ground. And I know New Media Expo a couple years ago, at least, they had a special industry ticket that, you know, if you were coming as a professional, you had to pay a higher price ticket because those events or those talks specifically catered to you, only that higher price ticket was allowed in. And I personally, as somebody not with, you know, with a ticket that didn't allow that, I didn't care for it too much. So my first reaction was, at least up till now, not have that. But as I'm, you know, going further, I can kind of see how having a special industry ticket does potentially make sense at some point in the future.
Yeah.
And with that special industry ticket, you have to bring in the bodies to make it worth that added value too, and then be able to sell enough of those to cover your cost of,
right, of
you
course.
Know, probably paying for some of those people to show up.
Yeah. So struggles.
Yeah. So it's a delicate balance. I understand completely. Well, I'm excited really about July and coming out, and convinced my wife to reschedule our summer vacation. And so let's just put it this way, Dan. I have some pocket marks in my butt where my wife chewed my butt for making changes, but we were able to make that happen. So look forward to coming out.
Yeah, we look forward to it.
But
Dan, I saw that you guys were sponsoring the PodFest down in Tampa coming up.
Yeah, that's something we've done recently with a number of events that have podcasters at it or that even are in the podcast space. Last year, the LA PodFest, which is more of a fan event, not necessarily a whole lot of creators are there. But we sponsored that and sponsored, the PodFest coming up in Tampa and potentially looking at to do something with the New York City PodFest. So, you know, nothing huge. We don't have the funds to make huge investments or be title sponsors even at some of these smaller events, nor do we really want to. But we like to be there and like to have a presence. And, you know, we see those as, for lack of a better term, kind of stepping stone events to what we're doing. They're lower priced. They're usually targeted towards people that can drive in and don't have to get a hotel. So it's more easily accessible. But we like to, you know, from a marketing perspective, if they go there and they like it, we like to be there and say, if you like this, then, you know, perhaps you'd be interested in, you know, taking it one step further and coming to our event. So that's kind of the idea behind it, as well as, you know, most of these events that are running, we know the people running them at this point where, you know, we like to support them. So trying to do that kind of thing and spread the word while still, you know, keeping an eye on the bottom line for sure.
Yeah. Are you going to do your satellite kind of events this year? I haven't seen any announcements of podcast movements in cities around the country leading up to your event like you did last year. Is that something that you guys are doing?
You know, last year we did those, but they were very much, I guess, what I would call pop-up events, in that we really firmed up the plans about a month out or a month and a half out. Mm-hmm. So those could potentially still happen. We saw a little bit of an ROI on them, but not enough that they were just, we've got to do them. So we broke even on them all and spread the word a little bit. You know, so it's something that's there. Quite honestly, anyone who's done events know this. The first few that we did, we had a sponsor, and the second few we did on our own. And the ones that we had a sponsor on made a whole lot more sense to continue doing than the ones we didn't. So, you know, we've potentially been approached by a few different people asking us if we would do one again, that they would, you know, want to partner with us, and we'd certainly be open to that. And we think it's cool because we still all the time get feedback of, well, when are you coming to Miami, or when are you coming to Seattle? Or, you know, we've got, you know, you name the city, and we've had multiple emails of people wanting next year's to be there. And obviously going to all those places isn't feasible. You know, bringing down our registration costs for Podcast Movement probably aren't feasible just because of the cost to put it on. But we do like the idea of being able to do miniature type things in different places. So, yeah, so they were successful. I'll say this, they were successful for those in attendance. We had a good number of people that were there. Everyone that have gone to the four or five that we did enjoyed them and wanted us to come back. So, you know, there's potential there, but, you know, and that's why to some extent, why we're supporting the other people that are doing similar things, just because sometimes it's easier to go as an attendee and just point people in that direction rather than do it ourselves.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, you know, if there's ever an opportunity to do an event in Seattle, I'm on board with you. So,
all right.
So just a couple of things. The one thing I could say about these smaller events is, if you're going to be organizing a smaller event, you say, for example, this event they have is happening in Florida, they need to start reaching out earlier. You know, for example, they reached out to us, and, you know, I set my budget line on what we're going to support financially for sponsorships and stuff like that very early in the year. And when someone comes in the middle of the year and says, hey, I'm 2 weeks out from an event and I want to sponsor this, and then I have to say, boy, I wish you'd been on my radar, you know, 3 months ago, where I could have, you know, figured out what we could, you know, and get materials and all that stuff ready, or send someone there, schedule someone to be there. So, if you're a content, if you're thinking about having one of these events, the best thing to do is contact early, so that, you know, that we can get you on a budget line and we can get turned around. I'm not so inflexible. I can't turn around something in a couple of weeks, but I really then have to look at it deeply and say, okay, what's the value? How many people are coming? And you need to share that kind of information too. Tell me, all right, we're going to have 200 people, or we're going to have 80. And if you're going to have 80 or 100 or 200, don't be asking for $10,000, you know, because I look at it a cost per head type of thing, on what we're going to get, you know, out of that from an ROI standpoint. Sure, the exposure is great, but at the same time, we're a business and we have to, you know, justify that type of expenditures to, you know, dollars that are going to actually come in. Another thing too, Dan, and that's completely switching gears here and going back to the content creators. Rob, our company, Libsyn, we're all going to this big event, and I think it's in Louisville
No, in Nashville.
Nashville.
Yeah.
And it's for the faith-based. It's a faith-based conference, not specifically for podcasters, but you know, faith-based right now is the number one category in podcasting. It is the by far the largest. And those folks are looking for information on how to grow, expand, build their shows. They spend money. So don't, you know, as you guys are growing and looking at specific categories, don't forget about that particular category.
Yeah.
You don't have to have faith-based style sessions, but you should be able to attract those folks that are making content in faith-based just to come for ideas on how to grow their audience and use tools. And they're not going to necessarily be interested in the monetization start because they have their own monetization method through tithing. But they are huge.
Yeah.
It's a huge amount of time.
And that's funny you say that because this is the first year that we've seen a lot of submissions when we have our open speaker submissions come through. And a large number of them are from that genre, for lack of a better term. A lot of them, I think what the term I've seen them use internally quite a bit is faith cast. So there's a lot of faith casting folks that have submitted. So yeah, but I did not, Todd, know that that was the largest genre. And is that the largest in terms of the number of shows or the number of downloads or?
No, shows.
Number of shows.
Okay. So basically every church has one now is what it boils down
to. Yeah, and Todd's talking about the event. It's part of the NRB, which is the National Religious Broadcasters Conference in Nashville. It's actually February 22nd through the 25th, I believe, or 26th.
Yeah.
And it's at nrbconvention.org is what it is. And there's going to be about 5,000 religious broadcasters who are going to be attending this event. So trying to tap into those folks is probably a good market for you guys.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Todd. Both Todd and I and Lipson are going to be at that event, you know, with booths and stuff. So we'll be sure to mention your event to as many people as we can. Yeah.
Thank you.
Todd, go ahead.
I think the key here is that, you know, like you said, fragmented communities, but all these groups are, no matter if it's sports or tech or education or entertainment, you know, they're all looking for info. So, I'm glad to see you guys expanding, but I don't know if you'll ever get the comedy podcasters out. I don't think, you know, I don't know if you ever will, just based upon, you know, a lot of those guys use their shows strictly for a promotion standpoint, and then they're on the circuit, you know, they're running comedy clubs and so forth.
I think you'd have to have a stand-up event as part of your conference to get those guys to show up.
Yeah, probably so. Some, yeah.
It's probably a fun idea.
Yeah, we actually did try that last year. We had a number of comedians. We had Aisha Tyler coming in, and we were partnering with a couple different folks that we were going to try to do something. But she signed at some point before the event some new show. I don't know, CSI or one of those real criminal shows on CBS. She ended up signing on and having to change her travel plan. So we ended up scrapping that idea. So it's definitely something that we could see if we have a good, you know, a good chunk of comedian podcasters there that we could probably do and make pretty successful.
Yeah, it's the same concept that they did at PodFest. They had one session that had a bunch of the comedians, podcasters get up there and do stand up for like 5 minutes each one of them. So it was like on Saturday night or something like that. They had that kind of thing where they had Aisha and then each of the stand up guys would get up and do their little bit. And it's, you know, unless those guys get paid for doing it, they're probably not going to show up.
Yeah.
We are at 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
that happens. Todd.
Yeah. Rob, anything in the planning, pile here for upcoming for next week or?
Well, there's always a bunch of people that I've got kind of in negotiation to come on the show. So I don't have anybody that I can announce right now, but yeah. And plus, I think we're both off on the 13th, right? Something like that, of February.
Yeah, I'm doing our, speaking of Chicago, and my guys hate it when I say this, but we're having our winter retreat in Chicago, where we lock ourselves in a hotel room over the weekend and do the evil empire planning of what we're going to conquer over the next year. So some of that we'll be talking about stuff that we're still working on to conquer. But no, we lock ourselves in a hotel room for 3 days, and it's quite the sight. Someday I'll be able to share the pictures when they're no longer top secret. But we line the walls with we get those big post-it note pads, those huge ones. Yeah. And I didn't know if any of you guys knew that, but you can tear those off and then you can stick them on the wall. Mm-hmm. So we always leave with like 30 of those. You know, and it just kind of makes it easier to brainstorm. We can walk up and we can talk about it and we can yell at each other, and it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, full weekend for the Blueberry team, Raw Voice team in Chicago, freezing. But we rent a nice, really nice suite in one of the hotels, and I get to pull rank and actually stay in it. So that makes it kind of cool. But anyway, that's what's planned for my weekend. You're going, where are you going, Rob, on Valentine's Day weekend?
I'm not, I don't know that I'm going anywhere. I'm just going to be here. Oh, so I could probably do a blab just myself of the show on that day.
That'd be cool if you want to do that.
And then, but I think on the 20th, I think I'm available too. The 6th of February, I'm good. The 27th, I'm going to be in, Nashville. So, I can probably do it in the morning, in Nashville. I think.
So I'm good on the 6th. I'm good on the 20th. Just not that weekend of Valentine's Day weekend. That's the only weekend I'm not.
Okay, sounds good. Dan, thank you for joining us. It was great to hear all about
podcasting. Thanks, guys. I'm excited to build up to it and maybe talk again as we get a little bit closer. It's five months away. We got a long ways to go.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. Podcastmovement.com.
Yep.
There you go,
everyone. All right.
Yeah, so everybody take care.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
You know what, Rob? I think there's my voice delay is like lagging about a second, isn't it?
We've had a lot of latency in this show today. So it's kind of unusual. It's usually not this bad, but there's a lot of latency going on.
Busy day at Blab. Busy Saturday morning for Blab.
Yeah. Their servers are having a hard time keeping up, I think.
Have you guys seen that Zcast thing that came out? It's like Blab only for just audio. So it's got the same idea where you can join, you know, take a seat kind of thing. Got the chat bar going, but there's just no, it's just taking the video out of it. That's pretty
cool. I don't know. Dan, do you know, are they making the audio available after that?
Yeah, so they've been recording it the whole time. They just don't have the user interface designed yet or set up yet. But I think they're like 3 weeks away from that. So they've got the minimum viable product out right now, and they're inching closer to actually being something that's better. Mm. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
I've heard it's like people have mixed results with it. So I would say if you're using it, make sure you have a backup recording for sure. So.
Well, I did see somebody in the Google Plus group though say, "Well, I tried the Android app and it didn't work very well." But there is no Android app, so I think there's also some because there's Zencast and there's Zcast and there's Zencaster. So there are a lot of things, a lot of room for confusion. So my guess is that some people are using one and then leaving reviews for the other,
and confusing it with another. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like a job for a trademark lawyer to spend $800 and get their trademark filed and then tell those other groups you need to find a new name.
Does that work if they're all international, though? It's three different countries. Can they?
Oh, probably not.
Why would you name your product so similar? It just causes
lack of research. They didn't Google it like we're talking about. They didn't do a 30-second Google search to see if there's something like them up there.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, thank you guys. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Hey, thanks.
All right. See you.
Okay.
So you can reach Rob or I here, Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. And of course, you can reach me at Geek News on Twitter, Rob.
You can find me on Twitter as well at Rob Greenlee and robgreenlee.com and Spreaker.com. And I do another show on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific called the Spreaker Live Show that I do. I have that bridge ratings conversation coming up this Wednesday. So if you wanted to do a deeper, hear a deeper dive on the whole controversy, and I kind of think of it as a controversy that's brewing between radio and podcasting around this whole topic of changing directions of this 11-12-year-old podcast medium. So go check that out. That's at SpreakerLiveShow.com.
They can try all they want. Everyone, thanks for being here, and make sure you get over to newmediashow.com. Please subscribe to our show. When you're over there, you'll see the big fat juicy iTunes and Android link on there. You can subscribe with one click on either one of those. We want you to get subscribed to the show, so that way when you're doing other things on a Saturday morning, you can get the show on demand, as they say. So everyone, thanks for being here again. My name is Todd Cochran. Thanks, Rob, as well. And we'll see everyone here on next week on the New Media Show.
Bye.